Same sheet.
Is that a discussion?
Yeah.
The House Committee on Education will come to order. Welcome to the House Education Committee. If you have a cell phone with you, I would like to assure you that the testimony you are about to hear will be so compelling that you will have no interest in any text message, calendar, or telephone call you may receive. So please don't just turn it to vibrate or silent. Turn it all the way off. You're not going to need it. And we are going to do things in a different order than what is that was a good example than what is on the list here. And we are going to first do House Bill 2693. We'll move into the work session after that on 2544, and we're going to do House Bill 2509 last. The only bill we have a public hearing on today is 2693. We will not be taking testimony on either of the other bills today. And with that, I will open a public hearing on House Bill 2693. And would invite Representative Kotek and Senator Lori Montes Anderson. Welcome, and thanks for coming today.
Thank you for having us. Chair Gelson, members of the committee, for the record, I am Tina Kotek, State Representative, House District 44, which is North and Northeast Portland, and I'm very pleased to be here today to speak in support of what is a priority bill for me this session, which is House Bill 2693, which seeks to take the recommendations of the Task Force on School Nurses, which you should have a final report from the task force in front of you. The bill attempts to take the recommendations of that task force and move them forward in terms of putting into statute what we need to do here in the state related to school health services, particularly our school nurses. And back in 2007, we passed the bill to get the task force started to look at school nurses in the state, where we were, what was the situation in schools throughout the state, and what did we need to do to get closer to a nurse-to-student ratio that would keep our students safe and healthy and contribute to their ability to succeed in school. We have members of the task force here today. Our co-chairs will be presenting next about the bill, and was very pleased to serve with all those folks, and they did an admirable job. And I think you all find the report very helpful. If you haven't yet seen it, I know some of the folks in the interim we had made presentations during the interim as well. The only thing I would like to say, just in brief, is why this topic. I would like to ask you to think about this in the context of what we're doing in some of our other committees around healthcare reform. I think there's an assumption out there that there's a school nurse in every school 5 days a week, and kids are getting that initial contact with a health professional when they need it, and that is just not the case. And as we talk about providing more insurance for kids, making sure they're covered and doing other things, particularly around school-based health centers and other means of providing service, we cannot forget the important role of our school nurses in the school, providing that immediate contact point to deal with immediate issues, chronic issues, all the issues related to health that help keep the students in school healthy and learning. And I just urge you to give this as much consideration as you can. We know that there might be a fiscal on this bill, and we're not sure what that is yet, and we'll provide you information as soon as we get it. But this is a really important bill, and I'm really glad you're able to hear today. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Senator Lori Montes Anderson, that represents Gresham, Trout, Delwood Village, and Fairview. I'm delighted to be here. I want you to remind the committee that currently Oregon ranks 49th in the nation for their student-to-school nurse ratio. And back when I was in high school, a school nurse, you know, she was there to help in a very general way. But now there are so many complicated medical needs in our school system now, and I really feel this is an issue that we really have to deal with. Yes, they do immunizations. Yes, they do vision screenings and hearing screenings, and they coordinate management of the chronic care. But I was a school-based health center nurse for 3 years at Oregon City High School, and I remember when the school nurse came to me and said, Lori, I'm not going to be able to do any gastric tube cleaning and suctioning on this one patient. And she is one nurse for, I think it's 16 schools. I can't remember exactly how many schools. I was actually terrified to realize what the responsibilities are of the school nurses right now, and for them to have to delegate to other people when they are not around to do that. And they do. They delegate a lot. We are setting ourselves up for a huge liability. We do. We have a huge liability risk, and we have to start dealing with this issue. So that's basically what I wanted to say. I hope that you look favorably upon this. Yes, we're in a huge economic crisis right now, but we can still need to at least be able to progress this bill through. And who knows, maybe there's federal stimulus money to help us through with this. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for our colleagues before we move on to the next panel? Representative Harker.
Just a comment. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sick of statistics like this. 49th in the country. I'm just sick of it. Mm-hmm. We've got to move on.
That's true.
We're not a third world state. We don't want to be one.
Yeah, we are. Don't want to be.
Representative.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to share appreciation. Some of us heard some reports during the interim a little bit about your work, and it's critical. Your thanks for your time and your patience in working through all this is appreciated.
Welcome. Thank you.
Hello, ma'am.
Representative Roblin.
And I do want to say thanks. And the last time I got to hear about this, we were in the interim, and we talked about the school district in which I lived, in the need and the fact that they did have nurses in all their schools. Not full-time at the elementary. They shared them, but we still had them. And I have to sadly report that due to the things that are happening now, I think they're down to one for the district. But it's very frustrating for me to watch that, and having been a principal, knowing how important those school nurses were and how medically fragile a number of the students that we have in our schools now are, it's a real concern. Now, we do have a health clinic, which was helpful. It's taken a while to get that. But I think school nurses have a vital part in making sure that kids can be healthy, successful as citizens. So hopefully we'll get back to those points. But it's been a sad little while as we've gone through this year, the budget we've already had to deal with.
Yes. Thank you.
So thank you.
Thank you. Well, thank you.
I guess you're disappearing for a couple minutes.
So our next panel is Nina Ferraris, and please forgive me if I mispronounced your name, and Jan Hoskman. Thank you. Please, and if we could hold the questions until both of these ladies are finished. If you would please start out by introducing yourself. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Nina Ferraris. I'm a school nurse in the Beaverton School District. I've been there about 18 years. And my colleague Jan will be getting our PowerPoint ready for you, and we're passing out copies of that also. And I also want to acknowledge that, yes, we are in an economic crisis, and particularly in this time of budget cuts, I really appreciate your willingness to entertain and consider this vital legislation for the state of the health of our children in the state of Oregon. The purpose, we'll just briefly run through the actual legislation so we're all speaking the same language. The purpose of this House bill is basically to make sure that the health needs of students at school are being met in a safe and legal manner. The language, as we get into the language, Section 1 basically defines what a quality standard education for all students should look like. Section 2 then gets into the specific basic standards for school nursing services. And we begin that section with a few definitions. A licensed nurse is an individual either as a registered nurse or a licensed practical nurse, which is licensed through the State Board of Nursing. Continuing on in that vein, you know, registered nurses can function independently. They're an autonomous practice. Licensed practical nurses function under the supervision of or the direction of a registered nurse or other licensed healthcare professional. In the school setting, the registered nurse is responsible for applying nursing knowledge, making critical thinking, clinical judgments, developing health plans. The licensed practical nurse, in general, in the state of Oregon in schools, works one-on-one as a classroom nurse with those medically fragile and nursing-dependent students. And they function under the direction of the registered nurse. Continuing on then with the definitions, when we look at a medically fragile student, you know, that's a student who has significant, unstable, life-threatening medical conditions that require frequent nursing interventions and assessments. For example, that could be a student that has a severe seizure disorder, that is not well controlled on medication, has frequent seizures throughout the day that can really compromise their respiratory function. And so they require frequent nursing intervention and assessment to maintain them safely at school. The next category is a nursing dependent student. And those are students that also have significant, unstable, life-threatening medical conditions, but they require constant, direct, one-on-one nursing service. That would be, for instance, the child with a seizure disorder who's also ventilator-dependent, has frequent seizures, requires frequent suctioning, lots of technological things to be done and happen to that child for them to be safe at school. They require a nurse with them all the time. Section 2, then we continue definitions. It talks about a school nurse. In the state of Oregon, a school nurse is certified and defined by the Teacher Standards and Practice Commission, must be a registered nurse holding a bachelor's degree, qualified to conduct and coordinate health services programs of a school, and also hold licensure through the State Board of Nursing. Then basically the meat of Section 2 gets into the student-to-school nurse ratios. These are nationally adopted standards. What we're recommending is that one school nurse serve a caseload of 125 medically fragile students. Those are students who need frequent nursing assessment and intervention. And then, of course, we have the one school nurse per one child that requires nursing-dependent services, and those are the students that must have a nurse with them at all times. Section 2 then also asks the Department of Education to report annually the state of school nursing services in the state and conduct surveys to find out how many medically fragile and nursing-dependent students we have in the state. Section 3 then says that we'd really like these parameters to be in place by July 1 of 2011. Now, according to the anecdotal data and survey data that the Oregon School Nurses Association has gathered, along with the task force, we believe that we have achieved these ratio standards in school districts that have school nurses. The school nurses are reporting that, yes, we do cover and meet those ratios. Further data, however, is needed on the school districts that don't have school nurses. We're just not sure. Maybe they don't have medically fragile children. Maybe they don't have nursing-dependent students in their district. But further information is needed on those districts. Going on, then, Section 4 then adds a new definition, and that's for the medically complex student. And that's a student that either has a chronic, unstable, or acute medical condition that requires nursing assessment. This also will include the student that can have nursing delegation. This would be the student with a seizure disorder that is maintained with medication, but they often will have breakthrough seizures at school that possibly require rectal medication to be administered at school to stop that particular seizure disorder. That would be a definition of a medically complex student. And when we look at then, you know, related definitions, when we talk about nursing delegation as helping our schools, nursing delegation is a process by which the registered nurse trains an unlicensed individual a single task of nursing. So we train a specific individual, a specific task, to take care of a specific student. And in the schools, we use that a lot. It is my my calling, sort of my passion, that that's my job as the school nurse, to make sure that those students who have conditions that are stable and predictable, that I am able to delegate nursing tasks to unlicensed individuals, and they can be maintained in the regular building, in their regular school, hopefully in their regular classroom with assistance. But that's where nursing judgment comes in. As I must be able to judge each individual student with a complex medical need individually and determine what they need to be able to access their education in their home school and in their own classroom. And that's where nursing judgment comes in. We must look at each child and each educational setting separately and individually, but we do utilize nursing delegation to make sure that those children's needs are met in their classrooms. Section 4 then goes to include the ratio definition for one school nurse to every 225 medically complex children, and then adds that definition, that collection data, as part of the Department of Education's annual report. It also then goes a step further and encourages school districts to begin to get to the ratio which is nationally approved, which is one school nurse to every 750 students in the general population. And this includes those students with uncomplicated and predictable medical situations. And what we need to remember is that federal law already has dictated to us that today we must meet the nursing standards for registered nursing services for nursing dependent students, medically fragile students, and medically complex students. Those are rights that are guaranteed to students today under IDEA and Section 504.
Good afternoon. For the record, I'm Jan Hootman, and my work position is coordinator of health services at the Multnomah Education Service District. The Section 5 speaks to the fact of a timeline for general student population ratios. And as you will note in the overhead, it's really speaking, first of all, quite a distance out, 2014. The 1 to 3,500 population, to be honest, many school nurses right now have that kind of a caseload. So the impact to Oregon would not be felt in the very near future. And the legislation is trying to, again, be respectful of the fact of not putting a heavy impact on the resources in Oregon with an implementation process. The timeline then goes along to speak of 2016 by having school nurses have a ratio of no more than 2,500 students. 2018 would go down to 1,500 students, and hopefully then by 2020 we would be at that national standard of 1 to 750 students. Section 6 speaks about requiring then school districts to achieve staffing ratios for the medically complex students by July 2012. So Nina did a very nice job of describing what that student is. That ratio, again, is 1 to 225 of that particular student population. Section 7 speaks about money, the challenge for all of us right now today in Oregon and across the nation. However, again, what the legislation is trying to do is to be conservative and build upon the resources that are currently in place. It speaks to the fact that there should be an ongoing analysis of school nursing services, but immediately to help implement effective models. That would also hopefully be studied within the context of this legislation. And you would look at such factors as geography, health needs of students, etc., to help build models. Not necessarily is this dictating one model for every single geographical area. It would also then help school districts comply with the requirements of Section 2 that Nina spoke to earlier in describing this legislation to you. Section 8 describes the fact that indeed Oregon is in an emergency status, and ultimately being 49th in the nation is indeed an emergent circumstance. We indeed hope that we can move our status into a much safer zone for our students. the legislation will be helpful for our students. We know that folks are still very much vested. I would like to take this opportunity to say that I think the competency in the state of Oregon is recognized nationally for those persons who are still doing school nursing. For example, to my right, just announced by the National Association, is the National School Nurse of the Year, Nina Fakaris. So that speaks well to school nursing. Just last year, the Salem School Nurse, Carol Cochran, was National School Nurse of the Year. Indeed, the national folks are looking to some of the standards that are established within Oregon for the practice of school nursing. So competency is within our state. We just need to expand our resources. You will have in your package of handouts folks who have spoken to the fact that they, too, as parents, as school administrators, as nurses, et cetera, feel about the emergent circumstance. We're not going to take our time to present that. We hope that you read it. We hope that our colleagues coming after us will speak to those stories that can perhaps answer your questions about how does this really look in schools today. So at this point, if you have questions to ask of us, we would be happy to entertain those.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and congratulations.
Thank you.
We're not supposed to clap, so I do the air clap, but anyway. I don't know if you guys can answer this, or Madam Chair, if you can, but is the nursing effort being coordinated with the health care committee in 2009? Is it going to be morphed in? Because some people in this room know that this is really I've always felt this is a cornerstone of our state's health care system for primary care. Not that school nurses are the end-all or school-based health centers, but I think they're an integral part mm-hmm. of the ultimate solution for Oregon in meeting our health care needs. So at some point today, if we could get somebody to address that, if you ladies know, that'd be great. But if not, I understand.
I don't know that I honestly have a good awareness about that.
And I don't know if Jack knows or what, but anyway,
and,
just
and
wanted
can,
to throw that out.
We can get
there.
That information from the committee, I'm sure, from Representative Kotek.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Dimbrough.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just in response to that, this is a subject that's been coming up in the discussions of 2009. So, yes, it's definitely, you know, certainly is part of the agenda. I just have a technical question. The language speaks to licensed nurse or registered nurse. Licensed nurse or school nurse. And so the licensed nurse would include both a baccalaureate nurse and also an associate's degree nurse. Is that the difference between the two terms, whereas the school nurse is just a baccalaureate degree nurse?
The licensed nurse speaks to a registered nurse versus the licensed practical nurse. So the registered nurse also includes baccalaureate and associate degree prepared nurses. The licensed practical nurse has a different education. The school nurse then further differentiates through Teacher Standards and Practice Commission and says that only school nurses can use the title that have that are baccalaureate prepared. So the legislation, when it speaks to school nurses, it's not necessarily following the definition as defined by Teacher Standards and Practice, because school districts are allowed to employ registered nurses that are not TSPC certified. Mm-hmm. But it's speaking kind of in general to that RN type role, and some of the language talks to licensed nurses, which also includes the LPN, and some of the testimony that will follow us will help address some of those questions with licensure.
Thank you very much, and congratulations.
Thank you.
Representative Van Orman.
I have a two-pronged question. when you talk about, I have a piece in front of me that says the Oregon average is 1 to 3,500 nurse-to-student ratio. Does that assume that there are schools without somebody, so that's why this number is so high?
Well, the way that I believe that average was achieved was we took the number of school nurses that are currently working in the state and then just divided that with the number of students
okay.
in the state to come up with the general average.
Okay.
It's not unusual, however, for nurses in the state to have caseloads in the three than the 3,000s right now. My particular caseload in Beaverton is about 4,200. I have a comprehensive high school and three elementary schools.
Thank you. My second question.
Follow up?
Thank you. If we have a school that doesn't have a nurse, my presumption is that if we've got some of the children that you have identified with medically fragile definitions, the teacher is responsible. They're in a classroom, and so it would be the teacher who would be ultimately responsible for the care of that child.
Or some staff person at the school.
Okay. But it wouldn't necessarily be a trained one.
Correct.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When we look at school nurses in the documents we have, does that include nurses that work for the ESD, not to a district? I mean, we keep talking about districts only, but a lot of our fragile kids are in classrooms that are run by the ESD, and so oftentimes they have a nurse or
Correct.
Nurses that train paraprofessionals to do some of the stuff. I mean, a lot of times they don't have the nurse that stays with them all the time, but they have those. Are those included in the total number of nurses that you're
yes.
talking about?
Yes.
Okay. Very good.
Thank you. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What are we doing in some of our districts now for medically fragile students today? Because obviously if they're required to have a nurse, they're going to have a nurse. And I can say my son's in the sixth grade. I'm pretty sure there's never been a nurse in the school, maybe the first year, and he shares with eight buildings. I think there's one or two in our district. But if you have this medically fragile student, they're receiving care now. How is that working? Not the effectiveness, but the practical aspects.
If they do not have a nurse, to be honest, we're not sure what is happening, and e.g. the task force did identify that there were significant areas in Oregon that had it. So how they're doing it, I mean, there's the potential risk that somebody is perhaps doing a nursing procedure inappropriately, and Oregon has been previously cited by the MITS decision some years ago for practicing nursing without a license. So in other cases, they may perhaps potentially bring in somebody as a consultant, but that person may not be well-trained in school procedures, be familiar with how to transition that student and put them into the least restrictive environment, et cetera.
Thank you. Representative Parker.
It's already been asked.
All
thank
right.
you.
All right. Thank you very much for your wonderful presentation. Next, we have Joan Bruce and Jamie Laureate. Lorenzen. I wasn't very close even.
Nobody ever is.
And even though we just went through that, if you'd start by stating your name for the record, that would be very helpful.
Sure, Jamie Lorenzen. I'm a mother of a special needs child.
And my name is Joan Bruce. I'm from a school nurse from the Bend Lapine Schools. I was one of the nurses that took care of her child. And we have kind of a twofold to tell her story. And then I have some reports from people in Eastern Oregon that do not have school nurses.
Thank
I'd like
you.
To present.
Please go ahead.
I am a mother of a child suffering with autism. If that weren't enough, he also has a feeding tube and a colostomy bag. I am here today to share with you his story and how a school nurse impacted his life. In 2007, my son, Austin, had lost significant weight. He was 7 years old and weighed 38 pounds and was wearing toddler's clothing. He suffered not only physically, but emotionally and academically. A school nurse intervened. She helped me find a pediatrician and a nutritionist. She gave me the resources necessary to help my child. Most children suffering with autism often have a difficult time transitioning from one task to another. They are sensitive to others touching them and need a lot of repetitive teaching. The school nurse knew this and brought in visual aids to teach him about feeding tubes. She came to doctor's appointments with me and came to the hospital every day showing him a doll that also had a feeding tube. Because she did that, the surgery and the days following went smoothly. The only reason I was able to bring him back to school as soon as I had was because a school nurse was able to train staff efficiently and effectively. The staff was very apprehensive at first about hooking him up for a feeding and all the complications that could arise. But the school nurse reassured them with consistent training. The staff began noticing immediate changes in both physical appearance and behavior. He was also able to get back into the classroom setting for longer amounts of time. And in the process, gave me the peace of mind that I desperately needed while he was at school. Since the surgery, Austin has gained 60 pounds and has grown over a foot taller. He is now able to be mainstreamed in a classroom setting for almost a full day. He emotionally and physically feels better and academically is making huge progress. Looking back at those difficult times, I felt as though I had the weight of the world on my shoulders. It took not only an emotional toll on myself, but my family as well. We felt helpless. Daily, I watched him suffer. I saw him literally look and feel worse as the days went by. The school nurse helped me to get the appropriate help to make him better. She was there not only for Austin, but for my family as well. Although she unfortunately is not our school nurse anymore, she continues to help us stay healthy. I cannot imagine where we would be today without her support and knowledge she gave us. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Sorry, I'm so nervous.
Oh,
this is not my cup of tea usually, to speak in front of everybody, but...
Well, this is a very friendly committee.
Yes, thank you. We just wanted to make sure you saw the pictures. This was before when he was at the hospital in St. Charles, and I think you've got a picture of that. He was very pale. He was bags under his eyes. It was just the, listening to Jamie, I knew that she was a young mother that just didn't have the resources, and I knew, being a school nurse, I have known the doctors there and knew who would be a special needs pediatrician, because not all pediatricians or doctors, you know, have that specialty. So once I got her to the doctor, I think he realized right away, and with the nutritionist too, to figure out how much he wasn't eating, because that's the problem with autistic children. They have sensory issues. They don't like the taste of food, of certain textures and things like that. So just to I didn't know if everybody knew that. But here is he afterwards. I mean, we could not believe how much he had grown. And this is what year?
Just a couple months ago.
Yeah, that he. So this was over almost a two-year process. And now he's in the classroom, fully mainstreamed with an aide, whereas before he was, I don't know if you're familiar with the Bridges program, and that's where they take nonverbal autistic children and actually have a person with them, an EA specialized in it, one-on-one to make sure that they can do transitions from one area to the next. And then usually they... as time goes by, it's usually a three-year program that they can be introduced into the classroom. So that's the purpose behind that program. Not all, it's usually a certain criteria of autistic children that need to go into that program. So within that short of time, he really transitioned beautifully. And I would just like to... Well, I should say, was there any questions about...
I think we'll let you do your testimony and do questions to both of you at the end.
Okay, great. So this was actually, I just got this email. I've been talking with a secretary from the John Day District who, they do not have a school nurse. They do not have a school-based clinic. They were planning on having one, but the nurse practitioner there had left. I know Eastern Oregon very well just because my husband was born and raised in that area. And I know that area better than I do the western side of Oregon. So this lady that you do have an email from her, we started to talk about what the needs are in that school. And she's in the elementary school, has been taking care of these kids pretty much on her own. She did not know about our diabetics that we're supposed to report it. The school districts are supposed to report the diabetics to the state registry, so they kind of know what's happening with the diabetics and how many they have. They are right now with the two diabetics. The parents are expected to come in and take care of them for their shots, for their insulin needs. They do not, at this point, do not take care of the diabetics. And as far as I'm, according to the secretary. And I sent her protocols
on how to treat asthma, seizure protocols. They did not have any of that. And so I've just been talking to her back and forth, trying to help her out on answering her questions, because she is not, they do not have a school nurse. And her question was, you know, how is this going to help us with these smaller schools like Dayville, Mount Vernon, Mitchell, that have these, how are they going to be affected too? And I know I have a sister-in-law who's a teacher up in Elgin, the northeast part. Now, they have a program out of the eastern Oregon, but that's been cut back too. The nurse there has been cut back to part-time, so she deals with Cove, Ambler, Union, Elgin. I'm trying to think of the other. Might be one more in there. So that's where, and they're quite a distance if you look on the map of far being far apart. And then we have a nurse out of the ESD out of Pendleton or Umatilla that goes all the way from Condon and Morrow counties, Pendleton. So it's just, she has a vast area to cover. And I really don't know her needs as far as the medically fragile and stuff, but that's what they're facing. And so I just wanted to mention Eastern Oregon is, you know, could use the help in having more school nurses.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for this panel? Representative Comp.
Thank you, Chair. And it's not necessarily a question this panel. I must speak up on behalf of Representative Wisnett, who has shared a couple of times that they have a private a business, I guess that's what you call them, but that is locating students there in Eastern Oregon and in their area that have severe high needs, physical, mental, and beyond the traditional populations that we know of in Eastern Oregon. Then we have private institutions that are taking students that into districts that are not prepared, whether it's instructionally or with health care. And so there's a surge in different things happening in all parts of the state that really increases communities' stress level and wondering how are they going to care for these children.
Thank you. Any further questions or comments for this panel? Thank you both very much. Next we have Tina Moore, Jack Dempsey, and Marilyn Hudson. Welcome.
I guess I have the privilege of going first.
And before you start, I see that you have a PowerPoint, and we have to wrap up this section of the agenda by about 2 o'clock, to give you a sense of that.
I think I can be pretty quick. Great. I think a lot of, at least some of what I have in my PowerPoint has already been covered, so I'll just skip through. There are only 16 slides. My name is Tina Moore. I'm a school nurse in Oregon City School District, and I'm also the president of the Oregon School Nurses Association. In my district, we have about 7,200 kids, and we have myself as a full-time school nurse and one other part-time nurse for those kids. So there are, on Fridays, it's me and 7,000 kids. It's kind of one way to look at it. And I have a copy of the PowerPoint in the packet. I also included a position statement from the National School Nurse Association on caseload assignments, which is identical to the caseload assignments in the bill. I also included in your packet an article from the Wall Street Journal. This has been an issue for several years across the nation, dealing with taking care of kids in school while they're in school. And finally, in the packet, I've included some kind of some testimony in support of school nurses from a couple of secretaries in my district and one principal in the district. School secretaries are very sympathetic and aware of the issue because they, a lot of the day-to-day tasks fall to them. And if you're familiar with walking into a school, it's the secretary who is who greets you. She's taking care of the kids coming and going, the parents coming and going, dealing with the principal's needs as well. While at the same time, during the lunchtime, they may be having, in one school, in an elementary school, they have five kids who come in during the lunchtime who are diabetic. And they need to check their blood sugar. They need to give insulin during that time. And three of those kids need to be supervised because they're not independent at it. They're pretty young. And the secretaries have been trained by myself and the other school nurse to delegate that supervision. So they're not giving the insulin at this time, but they're helping, they're supervising, they're double checking the numbers and making sure that student's doing okay. They're not having a high blood sugar or a low blood sugar. Is the PowerPoint? Do you see it?
Let's go down here to my computer. Flip here to my computer. Oops. Go to E. Oops. Click on E. And explore.
Thank you for your patience. I really won't take very long with this. Let's see here.
F5.
F what?
F5.
F5.
Thank you. Then I'll know next time.
Here we go. Yay. Okay. No clapping. So what is it that we do anyway? We've talked a lot about it, already, so I just want to hit a couple of things. We do provide direct health care. We provide leadership for the provision of health services, training those school secretaries, other staff in the building. I provide CPR and first aid classes for the district. Glucagon is an emergency diabetic medication, epinephrine for severe allergies. Lots of kids, I think, I won't quote the number, but a very high percentage of students in schools require medication during the school day. What do? We also serve as a liaison between school personnel, families, community health care providers. We help transition students from the hospital back to school. And we do those vision screenings and health screenings. I did a hygiene class for fourth graders and talked about hand washing and trying to cut down on the spread of communicable diseases. And this is a little quote from what one student wrote in his journal that day. What I learned from the nurse was so awesome. I learned that germs can travel just by handshakes. That's weird. So it's really fun to get in the classroom and do activities with the students, but I don't get to do that very often. We do work with the immunization program according to state law. We also have been working much lately with helping the districts implement disaster preparedness, such as pandemic flu planning. We give classes to the employees for OSHA requirements on bloodborne pathogen training. We help with health policies. We also work with public, like the Clackamas County Community Health Clinics, and myself provided three immunization clinics, flu clinics, at our schools this year. And things have changed. School nurses are not putting on Band-Aids and ice packs to students. We're doing much, much more, again, with the complex needs. Many more kids with severe allergies. More children with diabetes, and they're being diagnosed at a younger age, so they're less able to be independent. And again, the federal laws, IDEA and Section 504, are wonderful. They keep kids in school and in the least restrictive environment. But those kids are often needing some pretty complicated nursing care, such as tracheostomy, clean intermittent catheterization, oxygen therapy, et cetera, things that need to keep, that they need so that they can be there in school. More emergency seizure medications. And I would say one thing about delegation, it is, I do a lot of delegations, but most of the staff is there. One piece of the nursing law in regards to delegations is that the person being trained needs to be willing and able, and it's the nursing judgment to determine that. Many people who are instructional assistants or secretaries in the schools did not go into that job believing that they were going to have to learn how to provide a clean intermittent catheterization to a 7-year-old boy twice during the school day. So sometimes it's not easy to find someone who is willing and able to provide those delegations. And just a quick look at in my district in Oregon City in 2005 and 6, graph is showing the number of healthcare protocols, and we write healthcare protocols for kids who, for example, diabetes, allergy, asthma, seizures, bleeding disorders, disorders, etc. They're going up every year. Thank you very, very much for your time, and I appreciate your consideration of this bill.
Thank you. Jack.
Thank you, Chair Gelser and members of the committee. My name is Jack Dempsey. I'm here representing the Oregon Nurses Association. I want to thank you for considering this bill today. I want to applaud the work of the interim workforce for bringing this bill forward and to shed light on what I would consider a black eye for Oregon nationally. Kids in our school today have acute health care conditions that need to be managed by a registered nurse, and the competency needed to manage these conditions is the same that's needed by our nurses practicing in hospitals and clinics around the state. On some level, you could even consider it greater because the nurses in these schools a lot of times work autonomously. We do need to start moving towards the national standards needed to provide safe care in our schools, and I believe this bill sets us down the path to do that. You do only need to look south towards California, which had a case last November where the American Nurses Association, which we are a member, successfully challenged the use of unlicensed personnel administering insulin to California school children. I do believe that we are one bad outcome away from our courts mandating that we do something on this issue. I do want to offer a friendly amendment. I will suggest that we do need to change the focus of this bill from licensed nurses, which include LPNs, to registered nurses. A registered nurse does have a different scope of practice than an LPN, but I will say that in relation to this bill, the fact that they're able to work autonomously, that's what should be factored into the ratios, the student per school nurse ratios. We should be looking at registered nurses because those are the people providing the care. That's all I have for you all. Comment, Representative Huffman. On 2009, I'm not sure that's the place to address this. Obviously, there's three members of the healthcare committee on that, on the healthcare committee that's working through that bill and could bring it up in that capacity. I do think that that issue is more of a question for your Ways and Means Committee to consider. This school-based health centers, our public health departments, and kind of all aspects of the healthcare system in the state. So, thank you.
Thank you. Marilyn?
Yes. Chair Gelser and members of the committee, my name is Marilyn Hudson. I'm the RN and LPN nursing practice consultant for the Oregon State Board of Nursing. And although we've submitted written testimony on this bill, I would like to make a couple of remarks. First of all, the Board of Nursing does support House Bill 2693, but would like to comment on a couple of aspects of the bill. First of all, you all have already noticed the complexity and the level of challenges that nurses have to deal with around the state. With all of the different kinds of procedures that are required. These needs must be met by a registered nurse knowledgeable in school nursing. and often with the support of licensed practical nurses and unlicensed assistive personnel. Everyone has also heard about Oregon ranking 49th in the nation and how thinly stretched nurses are in this capacity around the state. But nurses are constantly, as well as actually school administrators, severely challenged in their efforts to ensure that required school health services are provided safely, competently, and frankly, in a manner consistent with acceptable and legal standards of practice. The Board of Nursing, however, does believe that this bill recognizes the important link between health and the ability of children to learn in schools. It has clearly articulated the need for nurses and carefully defined appropriate ratios consistent with nationally recognized standards. However, we have noticed that the term licensed nurse, which is defined in this bill as either a registered nurse or licensed practical nurse, is used throughout the bill as the alternative to the school nurse. Now, with earlier testimony, you all heard that the school nurse needs to be someone who has a baccalaureate preparation and knowledgeable in school nursing and is certified through the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. And so, really, the RN and the LPN have different scopes of practice. It is inappropriate to expect them to work interchangeably, and frankly, the RN may practice nursing autonomously, but the LPN's practice must be clinically directed by the registered nurse or another licensed healthcare professional who has authority to make changes in the plan of care. In addition, that authority to delegate tasks of nursing to unlicensed personnel, a function regularly required in schools, as you've heard other speakers testify to, that function rests by our administrative rules solely with the registered nurse. So to expect the LPN to work independently and interchangeably with the registered nurse presents potential violations of administrative rule found in Divisions 45 and 47 of our Nurse Practice Act. With appropriate supervision by the registered nurse, however, the LPN can have a vital role in school nursing while working as a team member with the provision of health services. And currently, there is LPNs do work in some school settings, and their relationship as a member of the team and not an autonomous practitioner is generally understood by the nursing community. In addition, the Board of Nursing does believe that it would be helpful to articulate more clearly in this bill the responsibility for the registered nurse for training and supervision of unlicensed and we would be happy to work with the committee to amend language that would reflect those suggestions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for this panel? Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Chair Gelser. To whomever might be able to answer this question, I'm thinking about this having come from a rural area, and then I realized part of my issues probably because I never had any money to pay for anybody. But in terms of small rural schools, the idea that you're going to have a registered nurse may be very difficult in terms of the employee pool. So is it possible that, let's say, an ESD could hire the nurse and then supervise the LPN in the schools? Is that a workable thought? It's probably a workable thought, but is it workable?
I guess what I would want to ask is who would be providing, what are you suggesting in terms of the supervision of the LPN? Who would be providing that?
Well, that's a good question. That's what I'm asking.
Oh.
Because I am concerned that we do have rural schools,
right,
that don't necessarily have access to the kinds of people you're talking about. Because I've been through that, trying to find the professional person.
Mm-hmm.
So in that respect, how can we help those rural schools if, in fact, they can't hire a registered nurse? What other options can we present that would make it easy for, or make it so that they could have at least some sort of health care at that site?
First of all, the one thing I would say is that the registered nurse pool is 44,000 plus. The licensed practical nurse pool is only 3,900 plus. So that the real practical, you know, the reality of finding a registered nurse who has knowledge and skill in this area is enormously greater than you would ever find a licensed practical nurse. And because of the current knowledge and competencies and understanding working in that field, I think I think the reality of actually finding a licensed practical nurse who would be in that rural area, who would be able, you know, have an understanding of school health, the probability of that would be very slim, and the reality of the way our administrative rules are currently written in terms of scope of practice, it really would violate their scope of practice to try and do that work autonomously. Whether or not there could be some linkage with a local physician or something like that, but still the delegation of tasks of nursing would not be able to be done by the registered nurse to the unlicensed staff.
Well, follow up, please. So are we talking about on-site, or are we talking about someone who could converse with somebody who is located in the ESD office?
They could be at a distance. In fact, that is the way most of those relationships work right now, is that the LPN may be on-site directly in providing care of a child, but would always have that communication available. And certainly, with that communication, that's acceptable. The RN simply must actually perform the delegated activity in terms of the delegation to the unlicensed person.
Right.
They don't have to delegate an activity to a licensed practical nurse if it's within that LPN scope of practice, and most of those activities would be. So there is a way to have that relationship work nicely.
Thank you,
Madam Chair. Just quickly, so just to clarify what you'd like to see changed in the bill, you'd like to see that the terms licensed and school nurse replaced by registered nurse?
Actually, the suggestions would be registered nurse replacing the term licensed nurse, because it could say registered nurse or school nurse. And then in some of the sections, it would be appropriate to change the language registered nurse or licensed practical nurse under the clinical direction of a registered nurse for the nursing dependent student, so that there would still be room and latitude in the bill to reflect the LPN's appropriate role in the care of children in schools.
Thank you. Just a quick follow-up. And that makes a lot of sense. Now, is there a need to have the term school nurse in here at all? That's what I'm wondering. Aren't all school nurses registered nurses?
They are all registered nurses. I think what this does by placing this language in the bill is it does strengthen and acknowledge the fact that this is a specialty area of practice, and for some time, this is how that recognition has occurred of people who truly already have that knowledge and competency that's established in this area. It's not unlike if you were going to take someone in for chemotherapy, it's an acknowledgement that that person is specialty certified in that area.
Thank you.
Representative Huffman?
Madam Chair, I was just going to thank everybody for speaking for me. I wasn't going to bring it up, but a lot of references to my district being sorely under school nursed, and so I appreciate that getting on the record. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions for this panel? Representative Harker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes. Trying to wrap my head around this. I guess I say that a lot lately.
Wrap your arm.
Confirmation. Grab my arms? All right. I'm trying to grok it, to use an old person's term. There's a nursing shortage. We have people such as the author of the email from John Day, who is a secretary performing these services. There are numerically more RNs than LPNs, thus the likelihood of finding one is greater, but there's a shortage right now. But you're suggesting that we should change the language of the bill to make it more restrictive, so that in many cases we wouldn't crank up the numbers of LPNs, and we would need RPNs, or the dichotomy is RPNs or secretaries.
Or principals.
Or principals, right? RPNs. RNs. Sorry.
Parker, this would be a sea change within the entire nursing community in the country in allowing for that sort of thing. We're already very much out on a limb within the nursing community, if you will, to allow for the delegation of the activities that we allow for. Many schools around this country do not even allow for that sort of delegation to unlicensed personnel. So to take it that further step, I think, would remove us so far from public safety considerations that it would be inappropriate for us to recommend that sort of change or to go with just leaving it as it is.
Follow up. We're going out on a limb. we would be in violation of, et cetera. Aren't we there now if the secretary's principals, et cetera, are doing
it? I would agree that we are there now. And certainly I wouldn't suggest that having an LPN there is not, would not provide something that having an unlicensed person there would. But what we do with that box around that LPN, we would then put that LPN in a very vulnerable position of working outside of scope of practice, which, they would not have the training and competency to individually delegate those things to unlicensed personnel. We would be setting up a dangerous precedent, I would believe.
Do we not have the dangerous precedent right now?
In a different way. Right now,
perhaps
the LPN
more dangerous
is,
fashion?
Well, I guess what I would say is that I think that we would be setting up a precedent if the expectation would be for the LPN to delegate to unlicensed persons. It would be totally, and we'd have to make major changes and overhaul to all of our administrative rules and everything, because that's what is understood right now regarding scope of practice and those differences. In one of the hallmark differences in scope of practice between the RN and LPN that is generally understood throughout the nursing community.
It feels to me like we're in an unsustainable situation here. We're charged with delivering things we can't deliver, so I'm trying to think outside the box here a little bit.
I understand, Representative Harker, and I agree with you that the nursing shortage is certainly a consideration here. I think the inclination would be to not let that put us in a frame of mind to alter a standard of practice that is consistently acceptable.
I think something to be careful of as well is that creep of the ability for individuals with disabilities to live independently in the community. And there are some states who have become so restrictive around their nursing delegation duties that parents can't have a respite provider for their disabled child. And I think something that is important to clarify. I'm supportive of this bill because I believe that all students benefit from having school nurses in schools. This bill, to me, is not about children with disabilities or kids with severe disabilities. And sometimes we look at pictures like the picture we saw earlier, or we see kids that have other kinds of feeding tubes or gastrostomy tubes, and that can be very alarming. But we also have to remember that at home, siblings, parents, aunts, uncles, grandparents, friends, babysitters are learned to appropriately do these things after having that appropriate support. And we need to make sure that we're not creating a system that requires that there be a nurse next to each of these individuals, because it makes it impossible for them to be completely included in their communities. And after learning how to appropriately do these things, it doesn't necessarily take a nurse to do them.
And I would just, Representative Gelser, I would like to say that it's not the Board of Nursing's position at all to say that parents and family can't do a wonderful job in caring for their children. I think the dilemma comes when it's a delegation to someone who is unlicensed, who's not a family member, who is providing that care, and how can we most safely ensure that it's done in a way that where we have the largest coverage and the best outcome for children.
And I think
we all share that concern.
I think we all share that, with the exception that for people with disabilities, also as they become adults and they're choosing that person that's coming into their home to help them with their catheterization, to help them with some of these things that might be nursing delegated duties, they may have a caregiver that they prefer to hire to be that person that does that most personal thing, and it may not be a nurse. And so I just think that as we're doing these things, we need to have safe training initially, but we need to make sure we are not creating a bureaucracy that is so big that people with disabilities are somehow imprisoned by their need for what become basic routine elements of their daily life, and that they should be able to choose and their families should be able to choose who it is that's providing those supports to them. Representative Maurer.
Thanks, Madam Chair. A couple of questions. How many school nurses are there in the state of Oregon that are licensed by TSPC?
I don't know the answer to that.
Why?
I don't know if that answer.
Okay,
is
somewhat. No. The answer is somewhat irrelevant. Why is TSPC dictating nursing practice when the Board of Nursing, by statute, has overarching authority to deal with the scope of practice of nurses?
Yeah, I guess I didn't. I don't understand it as such that TSPC would be dictating nursing practice. I'm confused by that perception.
I mean, are they not within the schools?
I believe what you're looking at in saying TSPC is dictating it, not unlike any other nursing specialty of practice, there are recognized specialties, whether it's someone who's working in oncology nursing, working in an emergency department, working in an ICU. There are additional certifications that the nurse can take, and that additional certification really demonstrates that that person actually not only is a registered nurse and has gone through a basic educational program for nursing, but in fact has specialty knowledge in that area of practice, which is what TSPC indicates. And probably Nina or Jan would be able to speak more articulately to the national standards and the programs with through the School Nurse Association, but that is my understanding of what that reflects, and a recognition that that's who the best person is to provide that sort of oversight of care of children in schools, because they have the specialty knowledge, just like you wouldn't want any run-of-the-mill RN giving chemotherapeutics. You'd want someone who had specialty knowledge in that area of practice. So it would be the same concept.
I would just say, add to that, it's the TSP, it's a certification that says this person has passed a test and they have so many hours nursing. They've attained a standard. They're not dictating the practice at all. It doesn't tell you how to practice as a nurse, but it indicates a certification that you've met a certain standard in your training and education.
All right, colleagues, we have exceeded our time by 10 minutes, and we still have more people that wish to testify on this bill. Do you have a very quick follow-up?
No, I'm fine. I just think Oregon's Nursing Practice Act is so far out in front of any other practice act in this country. I mean, maybe there's someone catching up to us, that, which I think is a good thing. It's a great thing. And I hesitate to look at other states and say, question what Oregon's doing, because I say, show me the damage it's caused. This is a pro-nursing diatribe. That nursing is great. We do a lot of great things in the world of nursing, and we can do even more. And I just don't want to cut a pool of people that are qualified. Your issue is very valid. We don't, we don't want to create a restrictive environment. And if there's an LPN out there in nowhere, Oregon, that can do it, and they have nothing else they can do, I don't want to write a regulation or a statute that prohibits that person from doing it.
Thank you. Thank you all very much. Colleagues, I'm going to ask for your help for this. We absolutely must be done with this bill by 2:20. Jennifer Taylor? It's always hard to be the last person, and for that I apologize.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
While she's coming up here, can I ask a quick question? I apologize, I wasn't here at the beginning.
Okay.
Is this bill requesting additional school nurses in addition to the school health clinics?
Yes.
Okay. So I want to clarify things.
They are different.
Ms. Taylor, please.
Hello. My name is Jenny Taylor, and I am here today to share my concern about the lack of professional registered nurses in our school districts. I am a registered nurse, and I'm here to tell my story of my son, Zachary. He had an accident during recess on the last day of school last year, at June of 08, at Davis Elementary in Gresham. And he fell from the monkey bars and at the playground, and he broke his left arm. And I'm concerned about the first aid that he received at the school prior to my arrival. His initial care was provided by an unlicensed recess staff and the health aide at the school, who is not a nurse. We received a call, my husband and I, from the school stating that your son has broke his arm and you need to come to the school. When I arrived at the school, Zachary was being held in a sitting position, and he had a bag of ice on his arm, ice cubes, not an instant ice pack, and he said it was hurting. So when an accident occurs, there needs to be a professional registered nurse that can critically think and triage the event. The first thing I did was lay Zachary down on the exam table in the health room, and I was told that he fell from the monkey bars. So when someone falls from, has a fall, you should evaluate them where they fell at to examine their head and their spine to see if they've had a head injury or a spinal cord injury. So I started to examine Zachary head to toe, and I asked him if he could feel his arms and legs and if he had any pain anywhere else besides his arm. I noticed his face was pale and he wasn't screaming. So that concerned me because I was worried that he could go into shock. So at that time I saw that his arm was displaced and needed to be immobilized, so I asked the school to call 911. The fire department and the paramedics responded and provided him with professional emergency care by immobilizing his arm, starting an IV, and administering IV pain medication. Zachary was then transported to Legacy Emmanuel Children's Emergency Department. We arrived at the emergency room, and he received trauma care for his fall and his broken arm. Microphone not working. I'm too close? Okay. So the orthopedic surgeon in the emergency room evaluated Zachary and set his arm with the conscious sedation procedure. Zach wore a cast for and an immobilizer for 4 weeks, and this accident affected Zachary physically and mentally for the summer. He is a five-year-old boy, and then all of his activities were restricted. So Davis Elementary currently does not have a professional registered nurse at the school. They have a health aide who is there 3 days a week from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. The front secretarial staff is the nurse, and I use that loosely because they are not registered nurses, the other 2 days and when the health aide is not available. This is concerning to me because these people are expected, that they are unlicensed and untrained staff, to take on nursing duties that I myself am a nurse and went to school, and I took my test, and I'm registered through the state, and I have licensure. Sorry. So the school health aide is merely a title unconnected to licensure regulation of nursing practice. The school health aide is not trained in assessments or teaching, and this is critical to triaging emergent situations. And I want all kids at Davis Elementary and throughout the school district in the state of Oregon to receive safe and appropriate health care while they are at school. As a parent, I hope the greatest education and school care for my child. As a nurse, I know that health care should be provided by those with the necessary education and regulated responsibility. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Van Orwin, do you have a quick question?
Yes, I do. About training. In Head Start, we train everybody every year in first aid. So you're saying that these people don't have that kind of training?
As a parent, that day, it did not appear to be that way.
Okay.
Since then, I've talked to, is it MESD, the Multnomah Education Service District, and they provide first aid training. So I am told that the health aide is to provide first aid care, but they have an ability to call a registered nurse, and that did not occur that day. And they did not know how to triage the situation, that it was more than just needing an ice bag or a Band-Aid, and that 911 should have been summoned prior to me arriving.
Follow-up.
Quick follow-up.
First aid required.
Yes.
Yes.
It is, yes.
I believe so.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Representative Veblen.
I'll just answer that real quick. You have to have a first aid card for X many people. So there is a requirement from the state that people in your building have to have a first aid card.
Okay.
And I would assume if they designated someone as the health that would be one of those people that they would require. But teachers also, as part of your licensure, have to have the first aid. And I concur that the biggest, I think the single largest advantage of a school nurse is triage. you know, having had to deal with times when we had nurses and we didn't have nurses, I triaged very easily. If it looked like it needed 911, I called 911. You don't even take a second guess. I mean, it's really easy to triage for me. My nurses did a little bit better job of that than I did. But for me, it was kind of like, this could be my child. What would I want done? I call 911. I mean, don't move them. Just leave them there. We'll figure it out. Get a blanket. Get the people who know what they're supposed to do. They get there very quickly.
Thank you, Representative Rivlin. And thank you so much for your testimony.
Thank
you all for a wonderful presentation. I know that we will be taking this back up. It's certainly a very important issue that's facing our kids, and we need to make sure that they're safe and appropriately covered. And as Representative Parker said, we have to stop being number 49 in these surveys. So with that, I am going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2693. And I am going to open a work session on House Bill 2544. You have in front of you some amendments. You have in front of you some fiscal statements. All of them still have us with that $10,000 fiscal. Representative Dimbro.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 1, Dash 2, and Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2544, which is dated February 10th, February 12th, February 17th, respectively. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Dimbro moves to adopt the Dash 1, the Dash 2, and the Dash 3 amendments dated February 10th, February 12th, and February 17th, respectively. Is there discussion? Representative Thatcher.
Well, I just think for the record we should discuss what those are.
This makes sense. Will you explain this to us, please, Kevin?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the Dash 1 amendments essentially is a preamble that would be included within 2544, excuse me. There is the legislative, fiscal, and impact for that. With respect to the Dash 2 amendments that would also be included, it includes a member who represents a local park and recreation association onto the task force, and the Dash 3 amendments reduces the $50,000 allotment to $10,000. It also, the sum is for purpose of carrying out responsibilities of the committee in particular. And then the Department of Education is also permitted to accept money assistance from the United States government or any other source. And the Department of Education agrees to the conditions placed on those sums that are not inconsistent with the duties of the task force.
Thank you. Representative Maurer?
Thanks, Madam Chair. We have additional amendments. Are we going to address those in
yes.
a separate motion?
Yes.
Okay.
Is there any further discussion on the adoption of the Dash 1, the Dash 2, and the Dash 3s? Representative Thatcher?
Well, I just had a question about the Dash 3 or a concern, maybe not so much a question. Only that, okay, the Department of Education may accept contributions of monies and assistance from the U.S. government or its agencies or from any other source, public or private, and I'm just concerned about there being money coming from a place that has a particular agenda, and that would might maybe influence the agenda to the task force and the subsequent result of the task force. That's what I would be concerned about.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Seeing Representative Harker.
I pass.
Okay, seeing none. Debbie, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Harker?
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Comp?
Aye.
Representative Maurer?
Aye.
Representative Roblin?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
No.
Representative Van Orman?
Aye.
Vice Chair Dimbro?
Aye.
Vice Chair Springer?
Aye.
And Chair Gelser?
Aye. Having received the required votes, these are so ordered. Are there any further, Representative Roblin?
I have an amendment. I'm not going to introduce it today because it has no physical, and I think we want to move this bill, but I will be talking about it when it gets to the Senate, if it gets there. I hope that it does. And it has to do with having the Marine interests represented in having any kind of discussion about outside. We have a lot of stuff that doesn't. It's a simple amendment that talks about a science educational facility located on the Oregon coast. We know the Oregon Aquarium is a place that has a lot of expertise about that, and I would love to have them on the committee, but I will bring it to the next one. So I'm not introducing it as an amendment here today, but I will be taking it to the Senate as this bill moves forward.
Thank you. And I think for the committee's information, this is a very, very special bill. This is a bill that is very well loved. I've had many people stop by the office requesting that an additional really wonderful organization, many additional really wonderful organizations be added to the task force. So I think as long as this bill is moving, such amendments will continue to follow it.
I agree.
Any other motions on this bill?
I would move -4 amendments, Madam Chair.
All right. Representative Thatcher moves the -4 amendments. Kevin, would you give us a quick overview of the -4?
The -4 amendments, Madam Chair, also require the task force to seek input from a variety of sources and viewpoints related to environmental literacy in particular. It also adds language that requires the task force to identify meaning some key terms required for developing the plan, and those terms include environmental literacy, climate change, and also healthy lifestyles.
Great, thank you. Discussion?
Madam Chair, I don't know what the committee's feeling. I'm strongly in support of this, and I'm going to pass an article last night, and it came out last night in my local paper that there was a book that was pulled from the state curricula regarding basically a lack of cultural competence and insensitivity toward a industrial sector in my district known as loggers. And it dissed loggers, and this was in a state-approved curricula. And it's for first graders, and I'll quote the page. The text on the page said, "These people do not take care of the forest. They cut down huge trees. They drop trash on the ground." That book was pulled this week from the curricula available to our first graders in Grants Pass, made above the fold in a local paper, and I just thought it was very appropriate to kind of emphasize the point that you have to have diverse views, because what may be inappropriate in downtown Portland is wholly appropriate in the hills of southern Oregon.
Thank you. Is there further discussion?
Yes.
Well, Madam Chair?
Yes.
I would just like to add that I think it's important to also identify the meanings of the key terms that are in the bill. Climate change is to one person may not be to another, so it needs to be defined so we're all talking from the same page. And same with the other terms.
Thank you. Is there further discussion? No, Representative Huffman?
About anything specific or in general?
We have another work session that we need to do.
Okay.
We have this article from Representative Maurer, which we can have another discussion about at another time. It's very germane to this discussion. Thank you for bringing it.
Yeah.
If you'd like to discuss the -4 amendment before we vote on the -4 amendment, this would be the appropriate time to make such comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any further discussion on the -4 amendments? No, seeing no further discussion, Debbie, would you please call the roll?
Representative Parker?
He's balked. I'm sorry, I didn't have a chance to see it.
Can we get these for a minute?
Representative Hedman?
Aye.
Representative Kahn?
Aye.
Representative Maurer?
Aye.
Representative Roblin?
I'm not sure either, but I'm going to say no.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Van Orman?
No.
Vice Chair Denbrough?
No.
Vice Chair Springer?
Aye.
And Chair Gilzer?
No. And I lost track of the vote total. 6-4, so the motion passes. All right, so the motion passes. Any further discussion on House Bill 2544?
We have dash 5 amendment.
Yes, sure.
That was obvious, wasn't it? I guess I would make a motion to introduce House Bill 2544-5 amendment.
Representative Springer moves to adopt the dash 5 amendment to House Bill 2544.
The dash 5 amendment, Madam Chair, members of the committee, adds three additional parties. Or rather individuals to the task force itself, the Director of Agriculture, the State Forester, and also the Water Resources Director. And I believe it also has the amendment designates that the chairperson is a non-voting member of the task force.
Thank you. Any further discussion on the dash 5? Representative Roblin.
You know, the concern is I actually like these people having input into this. At the same time, we're getting to a group that's so large that it's not going to be able to do anything. That makes me very, very concerned. So I wish there was a way to say that they had best get input from these people. I'm going to make that statement right now, that if it doesn't get in, whoever's on the task force better talk to these people, because I think they have a very important part to play in coming up with definitions and decisions, and I like them a lot, but I want to group that can work together and a reasonable size, and I think it's getting to the point of being awfully large. So, but I really like the idea that these people need to be included in the conversations, so thank you for that.
Great. Thank you, Representative Roblin. Representative Springer?
Excellent point. However, actually, these three are at my suggestion. Actually, I really can't even take credit for that. Somebody mentioned that to me. I come from a district that's very rural, lots of farmers, and in looking at this list, it did not feel or look diverse enough. And so I think that urging conversations with different entities is a good thing, but I think we have an opportunity to say that these conversations will take place. And so that's why I'm advocating for these. And the size is an issue. These three would bring the committee to 12. That's an even number. And that's why the suggestion is the chair is a non-voting member. So you have an odd number voting.
Okay. Thank you, Representative
Dimbro. Somewhere in my paper here, I saw a memo that came from the Board of the Forestry Department, is that right, on this issue, where they said the representative said that they wanted to be involved with this, but didn't specifically ask to be on the committee, I think. Is that right?
Correct.
And, you know, I do very much respect what Vice Chair Springer is saying about adding those, but I also respect what Representative Roblin said about the representation from the marine issue. And, you know, I think if we start adding people to this, then it's going to get out of hand. And so I think it makes more sense to me, particularly knowing that there's a desire to add a marine representative, to let this be handled more comprehensively on the Senate side, if that's the desire.
Thank you. Representative Huffman.
I agree with Representative Roblin, and I think if it takes 16 people on the task force to assure a balanced curriculum, then it needs to be 16, whatever that is. I'm not going to float anything that I can't perceive as down the road as being balanced, being taught to our kids.
I agree with that.
I mean, this is of concern to me, and this just came out today, but this is something I'm thinking about now. And that's why I think the makeup of the task force is critical. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Maurer.
I'm sorry, somewhat of shift. Why are the dash sixes? What's the difference between the fives and the sixes?
One has the non-voting member, and one has them as a voting member. It's the even odd. It's the even odd thing.
Even odd thing. Okay.
Yeah.
So really, the sixes aren't of. I wouldn't think they would be. Okay.
Representative Van Orman.
Actually, I'm not. And the other thing is, if you're going to add a Marine representative, I'm going to insist that we have an Army.
I know. But we need 16.
Yeah. All right, Representative Van Orman, and then we need to start.
Yeah, I will try to be brief because I want to respond to what Representative Huffman said. The issue is not what the makeup for this. It's not what the makeup of the board is. It's who's making the decisions about what the books you're going to use when you're in public education. And I've been on one of the committees, and I'll tell you, I didn't approve, but I was the minority. So I know, for me, this is about who's choosing the books we read as opposed to who sits on a task force.
Thank you. Any further discussion on the -5s? Seeing none, Debbie, would you please call the roll?
Representative Parker?
No.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Kump?
No.
Representative Bauer?
Aye.
Representative Roblin?
No.
Representative Thatcher? Representative Van Orman?
No.
Vice Chair Dembro?
No.
Vice Chair Springer?
Aye.
And Chair Gilbert?
No. Pardon?
Six nays.
Six nays. So it did not receive the required votes, and therefore it is not adopted. And so I don't bang the gavel.
You bang the gavel.
I do bang the gavel. All right. Would somebody like to make a motion to move the bill on to the Ways and Means Committee?
Madam Chair, I move that we move House Bill 2544 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
And to Ways and Means.
And to Ways and Means,
that's right.
Yeah. Yes.
Thank you. Representative Dembro moves that we move House Bill 2544 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a prior referral to Ways and Means. Any discussion? Debbie, would you please call the roll?
Representative Parker?
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
No.
Representative Kump?
Aye.
Representative Maurer?
No.
Representative Roblin?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
No.
Representative Van Orman?
Aye.
Vice Chair Dembro?
Aye.
Vice Chair Springer?
No.
And Chair Gilbert?
Aye. Having received the required votes, the bill is moved on with the due pass recommendation. And I would now like to take an extraordinarily brief recess. So if all members of the committee could be back in your chairs by when the big hand is on the 8th.
Nice. Like, oh, by yes, my...
work session.
Okay, so we are back in meeting, and I will close the work session on House Bill 2544 in case I didn't do that before. And I'm now opening a work session on House Bill 2509. Colleagues, distributed to your places, you have a dash one, a dash three, your fiscal impact statements, and your revenue statements. Representative Denbrough.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the dash three amendment, which is dated 3309.
Thank you. Representative Denbrough moves to adopt the dash three amendment, which is dated 3309. And colleagues, the dash three amendment goes back through and adds back in language addressing the importance of delaying pregnancy beyond the adolescent years and also providing students with information about their rights and responsibilities related to childbearing and pregnancy. And that was out of the discussion that we had yesterday. And the dash one reinserts the language as it had existed before. Is there any discussion?
I think it's good.
Pardon?
She went to get wrong.
Okay. Representative Thatcher?
The dash threes add back the language that was being taken out that we discussed yesterday regarding the financial.
Yes.
Said this, but I was wondering.
Yeah. Right. The dash three, it's not the precise language. It adds, it's with modernized language, it adds back in the financial responsibility and the delaying.
Instead of saying pupils, the students.
Yes.
Things like that. Okay.
Yeah. The language you're looking for is lines 11 through 14 on page 2 and lines 26 through 28 on page 2.
And Madam Chair, if I could say this
the bill, I believe.
This modified language is much improved, I think. And
I was talking about in the amendment.
The amendment. Oh,
in the
okay.
amendment. I'm sorry.
Okay, sorry.
And you can see how it was before. Representative Comp, were you trying to get in the queue?
No. I was trying to assist Representative Thatcher, and I was wrong, so I'm just going to put duct tape over my mouth.
You were indicating which lines, and we were looking at the bill, whether you were talking about the bill or the amendment. Could you say the lines again?
Sure. The lines in the amendment where language was put back in on page 2,
thank you.
If you look at lines 11 through 14, and then again lines 26 through 28, and this again adds back the language about the importance or the benefits of delaying pregnancy beyond the adolescent years in the first instance, and in the second, informing students about young people's rights and responsibilities related to childbearing and parenting. Is there further discussion on the dash three amendments? Representative Huffman.
Thank you for getting those added back in. I appreciate that because that was critical to me. Enough on the dash three, but then after a while I want to speak to the bill and the process.
Great. Anything further on the dash three? All right, seeing nothing, Debbie, would you please call the roll?
Representative Parker?
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Comp? Aye. Representative Bauer? Aye. Representative Moulton? Aye. Representative Thatcher? Aye. Representative Van Orman? Aye. Vice Chair Denbrough? Aye. Vice Chair Springer? Aye. Chair Gelser? Aye. Having received the required votes, the amendments are adopted. Any further discussion on House Bill 2509? Representative Huffman?
She grunted first.
No, go ahead.
Okay. I didn't know if we were counting grunts or hand signals. Grunts seem to work for Representative Maurer, or Gaskin. Representative Maurer brought up a point yesterday that I'm fairly new. I don't know if I'm majoring on a minor or if we're minoring, and we should be majoring. I'd like an answer to it. I'm concerned about how we got to this point. And when the ARs were brought up and read, it's always, I was always trained that we pass a law, and then the department or the agency writes the rules out of the law that was passed. And it seems bass-ackwards to me here, and I would like to know why.
Sure, and I am certainly not the department, but I've done a little bit of conversation about this over the last few days, and one of the things that I think we've all experienced is receiving voluminous piles of rulemaking notices from the department about from all sorts of departments about all of the activities that they do. And one of the reasons that some things are done in rule, and we actually indicate that things will be done by rule, is because it creates some flexibility. So it's not unusual for an agency over time to revise rules to improve the practice. The administrative rule that the department has adopted related to this health education is consistent with the statute as it previously was. It was not beyond the bounds of statute. This is just updating in statute and making sure that in the future, that if it were to change again, it would still have to be medically accurate. But there was nothing in the prior law that prohibited the department from adopting rules that required that these curriculum be medically accurate and age appropriate.
Okay, because I think that should be of critical concern to everybody on the dais, that agencies aren't going out and doing something outside of their purview.
And I do not believe that this was outside of the scope of the statute as it exists today.
Okay, thank you.
Is there any further discussion on House Bill 2509?
Madam Chair, and that is precisely my concern, is the agency is now, this is essentially a CYA. You're trying to go backwards in time. And I think it's wholly inappropriate that the agency should have come to us and done this first before they went out and created new rules.
Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The question's been asked a couple times, and I've just not received the answer that I yet need to hear, which is why we're doing this, if it's not because the ARs were already written. We have statute that's addressing this. This is taking place in schools, and I've just not had a compelling reason that I need to vote yes on this and move forward on it at this point.
Okay, thank you. Representative Dimbrough?
Madam Chair, I would just repeat what I said the other day at the meeting, just kind of hearkening back to my days with the State Board of Education. At the time the OARs were revised to use a more modern terminology, but that still reflected the existing statutes. But there was a sense at the time that there would need to be some kind of technical cleanup of the language of the statute in the next legislative session. And that's why it was presented to us today. And I don't really see anything inconsistent with good practice in what happened here.
Thank you. Representative Thatcher, were you?
Okay. Well, just having sat here and looked at these fiscal analyses, mm-hmm. the different ones provided for the amendments and whatever, something I noticed that I didn't hear yesterday in testimony, you look at I'll just with the second sentence under analysis, the measure also expands the mandatory topics of what should be covered by course materials and instruction in relation to human sexuality education. I didn't hear that at all yesterday, that it was expanding it. This says it is, which is kind of curious. And in the bottom paragraph, it says, starting about the fourth line at the end, it says HB 2509.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, goes down. It requires that each school district to provide age-appropriate human sexuality education courses in all public elementary and secondary schools, but does not specify that this education start at grade 6, like apparently the administrative rules currently say. And they point out the fact that some of these elementary schools are pre-K or kindergarten through grade 5, and the fact that it does say in the bill that I got to get back to that page here. Technology. Each school shall provide age-appropriate human sex ed courses in all elementary and secondary schools as an integral part of the health education curriculum. In other words, I'm hearing
or I'm looking at it as if there is a health class, it has to include, I mean, a curriculum on sex ed. My son's a 7-year-old kid, and there's health education presented to him. I'm wondering, is now this going to require the shall part, require that sex ed be part of that? And I question that.
I think what this requires is, in terms of a medically accurate, age-appropriate sex education, that would be a health. There's more to sex education than sex, and so in early elementary school, part of that is telling someone if someone how to talk to someone if someone is inappropriately touching you. It's some of that mandated child abuse training that we've talked about. It's part of how to take care of your body. I have my second fifth grader going in, and they are learning about how their bodies are changing and about why there's deodorant on the shelves at the school and the many changes that they'll notice in their body. And that's part of that age-appropriate developmental reproductive health. And I think that's what this is getting at. Those would comply with this. It's not an overbearing or alarming type of a mandate.
I understand, but we saw what the policy was. We had got copies of it last committee, and they broke it down into age groups, similar to what you were just talking about, inappropriate touching and all that. But now the Oregon Department of Education may require revisions in its administrative rules pertaining to human sex ed, specifically to remove the reference to certain grade levels.
Well, and again, I think that would ensure that anything that any health education curriculum that is being offered to a preschooler or a kindergartner or a third grader would still need to be medically accurate. That truly is the substantive change in the bill, is it talks about medical accuracy. The rest of the bill is fairly consistent with current practice.
Okay, Madam Chair, back to that medical accuracy part. I didn't hear any testimony stating that there was medically inaccurate. I mean, should we, for our math curriculum, say it has to be mathematically correct, accurate?
I hope so.
Yeah, exactly. So
I'm there.
I'm not here. That's not pointed out in the rules for teaching math. So I'm just wondering what's really trying to be got at here. I'm just not hearing that there's been a complaints about inaccurate information being taught to our kids. You know, there's no talks of storks or anything like that. I'm just wondering what.
Oh, no talks.
I'll be part.
Okay.
Where are we going?
Well, and I think that's a question I'm going to let lay on the table. We've got a couple of other people in the queue and another committee coming in. Representative Tom, did you have your hand again in the queue?
Not really, but thank you, Chair. The only comment that I would share is, as things change, and I will use it as a math example, I mean, you might teach the times tables one way one year, and you might teach them a different way another year. But particularly in the field of our medical science, there are advances and changes, and so we want to make sure that that children have those opportunities to learn those.
And I think Representative Huffman was in the queue, and then I'll come back down to this.
We're not going to try to pass this today.
No, we are going to pass this bill out today. Yes. Oh, there should be a motion.
Representative Dembrough, you sat on the Board of Education that was dealing with this, and you're assuring me that everything's above board. And do you recall any of the discussion around it and why this changed? Because what it boils down to me, it seems like, is we changed pupil to student. And that's basically what I'm being told. They're really, it's housekeeping, and when we added the language back in, I see that we've changed the word pupil to student. Is there anything you can add to that to get a yes vote out of me?
Well, you know, I will say that, as I recall the conversation on the board, it was remarkably unexciting, actually. But the you know, really it reflected, as we've been discussing here, just really a kind of shift in tone, a shift in emphasis in the language, to that this is a curriculum that needs to be taught not with subjectivity and ambiguity, but sharing information that is medically accurate in the sense of being evidence-based, right? I mean, that's what's meant by medically accurate. It's not, you know, this is a throat, this is a finger, this is not a finger, but rather that the lessons that are given are based on evidence.
And Representative Dimbrough, before we move on to the other things, would you like to put a motion on the table for this discussion?
That's a good idea, Madam Chair. I move to adopt the Dash 3...
You already did.
Oh, I did that. Okay. Then I move now House Bill 2509, as amended, to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded.
Thank you. Representative Dimbrough moves that House Bill 2509, as amended, to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. And we do have that letter from the Speaker here. And now we'll move back into the discussion briefly. We have about 4 minutes left in our time in this room. Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will be short. I'm thinking that the term medically accurate is not just in the curriculum that's being given, but who's actually teaching it. That it will have an effect on who's teaching it. In other words, the football coach, if he's going to be teaching this class, should be up to date and be medically accurate and not rely upon X's and O's. I guess that's basketball, right?
Thank you, Representative. Representative Roblin.
Only because Representative Thatcher brought up my field, mathematics, I do want to get on the record that elementary math teachers should not say you can't take the square root of a negative number. Because it is possible. We do it much later. They should also refrain from saying other things that are mathematically incorrect but seem right at the time. So I just wanted to make sure. They confuse kids with some of the... There's really fun mathematics that comes later, and they really confuse people later on when you have the high school teacher say, we're going to do this now, and they say, we can't do that. My teacher in second grade said we can't do that, and I'm thinking.
Thank you, Representative Redwood. Are there any further comments on House Bill 2509?
Just to respond quickly, then maybe we should have a bill to promote mathematically accurate teaching of math.
You tweaked me really in a place that was really frustrating as a high school teacher. Inaccurate information.
Any further discussion on House Bill 2509? No, seeing none, Debbie, would you please call the roll?
Representative Parker?
Aye.
Representative Heffernan? Aye, but I reserve the right to do otherwise.
Representative Kopp?
Aye.
Representative Maurer?
No.
Representative Roblin?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
No.
Representative Van Orman?
Aye.
Vice Chair Dimbrough?
Aye.
Vice Chair Springer?
No.
And Chair Gilbert?
Aye. Having received the required majority, the bill is passed to the floor. I will carry the bill on the floor. And with that, the House Committee on Education is adjourned.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. We've moved right. Our room.
Healthcare.
Healthcare, yes.
Oh, gosh.